Love beyond words, life beyond borders, geography is no barrier on the path towards true love. Since June the 1st this year, a total of 66 pairs of transnational couples, that's a Chinese person marrying someone who's not from China, have received their marriage certificates in Shenyang, capital city of northeast China's Liaoning province alone. Let's talk about the rising number of transnational couples in Shenyang first and later on in China.
Well, first of all, congratulations to these happy newlyweds.
Yeah.
But yeah, tell us what's going on, Hong Kong.
Okay. So let me tell about the rising number of transnational couples only in Shenyang.
Yeah.
As the beginning. And from this June, the marriage registration service involving Chinese nationals and foreigners in Shenyang have been officially transferred to the newly established Shenyang Municipal Civil Affairs Bureau of Marriage Registration Center, according to the paper's report. And just 2 months after this new policy began implemented, a total of 66 foreigners have received the marriage certificates with their Chinese partners in the city. And as this news grabbed the limelight online, and Chinese netizens gave them a lovely nickname as the foreign son-in-laws, Yang Nu Xu, or foreign daughter-in-laws, like the Yang Xifer. And also, according to the official figures released by the local marriage registration center, the Yang Nu Xu are mainly from US, Australia, and Japan, while the top two home countries of the foreign daughters-in-laws are from Russia and Thailand. So, also in Shenyang's case, the number of foreign son-in-laws have significantly overwhelmed the foreign daughters-in-law, and demonstrating a ratio of 29-4. So most of the transnational couples, they were met through the introduction of relatives or friends, or they work in the same place or something. And well, some fell in love with the help of the dating apps.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Someone's excited.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm just, you know, I think dating apps, that's cool.
Okay,
that's cool.
Yeah.
But maybe not something you often associate with true love. I don't know. Maybe
yeah.
other people do. Anyways, most of the foreign husbands in these transnational marriages are either, I guess, engineers working in Chinese branch foreign enterprises, or some being English teachers. Those are just the most. Of course, there probably are other people doing other kind of jobs. And so you had said in some cases, in Shenyang, these couples use, I guess, translation software to talk to each other, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so people are like, oh my God, like,
yeah.
how can you have a relationship with somebody like that? Well, I guess this is something that is more common in, I guess, the older transnational couples. So maybe people, you know, a bit older, finding love here in China, one being a foreigner, one being Chinese. And so maybe they're a little bit later on in life. And so these kind of ways allow them to better communicate. Maybe they can communicate basically. But yeah, so this is more common in the older transnational couples is what I'm trying to say. Maybe they're less inclined to learn another language. Yet in younger couples, it seems they either use English or Chinese to communicate with each other. And I don't know. So, you know, you see a lot of differences and similarities, I guess, in the way love is expressed here in China with Chinese, and also how foreigners express themselves too. But it does seem that sometimes maybe the differences do come to the forefront. And in fact, besides these 66 pairs of newly married transnational couples you had just mentioned, there were also 25 pairs that came in to the bureau to file for divorce.
Oh,
it just wasn't working out. The top reason for the divorce was the, I guess, the incompatibility that was caused by long-distance relationships. And I guess in these foreign marriage cases where divorce happens, it's most common when your partner is from the U.S. or Japan. And I guess, as I understand, the reason why it's so common is maybe they talked to someone, a staff of the Registration Center for Marriage. The paper talked to this person, and the person said, often what happens is maybe it's hard for the Chinese person in the relationship, the married people, to get a visa to maybe someplace like the U.S. So this means long distance relationships sometimes happen more often than what they would like, and so in which case it just doesn't work out. So yeah.
Yeah, well, I guess when two people are from two cultures, two countries, of course you have a different document for travel, for staying, and citizenship. That's one hurdle that the two needs to sort out.
Yeah.
And also, I guess in a way, I would have thought that difference is more salient when you're from a different kind of background, obviously, but it hasn't stopped people from getting together, and it seems like as the common understanding usually goes, that communication is key, that if you can't communicate properly, if you can't express yourself really well and get the other person to understand you without any ambiguity in conversation, that's how you keep a relationship alive. But it doesn't seem to be a prerequisite in these marriages. Is it true that maybe to some extent, when we're talking about marriage, that is one art that I think not many of us can perfect, maybe having that ambiguity is a good thing? What do you think of that?
I do think communication is really important to help you understand each other's thoughts and maybe your mind. And I think we have stereotype, like in terms of those transnational marriages. Also, there's a obedient and very gentle Chinese woman and marries to a very romantic or very well-educated white guy or foreign guys. But actually now I think the marriage has changing, and more foreigners, they can speak in better Chinese and assimilating themselves to the Chinese culture. And also I think the couples, the transnational couples, they marry for true love, a matching soul or appreciation for each other's culture. So we can see in the younger generation of who have the transnational marriage, they really can speak each other's language well, at least English and Chinese. So they can understand each other much better. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think you're seeing in a lot of different places, like let's take Jiangsu as an example. The Jiangsu Office for Registration as it pertains to these kind of legal marriages in 2014 handled 1,439 foreign marriage registrations and only 207 divorces. So you're seeing a lot more marriages than people coming in to say it's not working. So that's cool. And then also in Shanghai, for example, there are over 10,000 Chinese married to foreigners from 1996 to 2002, seven times more than that of the 1980s. Here's what I think. You know, you're always going to find differences in people you either meet domestically or not. People are different, and we can be fundamentally different, and fundamentally different isn't always something that is just something you find with someone outside of your country. Though maybe it's more common, you can find fundamental differences with people inside your country as well. You know, like if there's a guy in the U.S. and he's a Republican and he meets a nice girl, she's a Democrat. Ooh, there!
Wow.
I think a foreign relationship would be much easier for these people to handle than the differences they're going to encounter. But we find that in the U.S., a lot of relationships with fundamental differences, like I had just mentioned, work. So I think it's comforting to know that people can find love no matter where you're from. And there's a language that we all speak to certain extents through our eyes, through smiling at somebody, through that extra long like silence where you're appreciating each other but no words are being spoken. You know, these kind of things, that's international. And love is something you can have with anybody, you know, and it doesn't matter where you are. And I think that's what this proves. And I think that that makes all of us living on this planet sharing stuff that much closer. And and that makes me happy because that means, I think, a brighter future for all of us, that maybe we can find love with each other.
That is so nicely said.
Yeah.
Romantic.
Yeah.
Ooh, that romantic foreigner.
But it's like bowl of chicken soup.
You know, that stereotype. I've seen plenty of unromantic foreigners as well. You know, everybody can either be romantic or not. And like, it says the gentle and, very womanly Chinese. That's the stereotype. Oh, dude, I've seen,
watch your words,
you don't mess with Chinese women, okay? First of all, damas, you don't mess with those ladies, period. But even younger Chinese ladies, I've seen them stick up for what they believe in. They're ferocious. You know, often we talk about tiger moms. You don't mess with their cubs, so I don't believe in that stereotype, too. I think you see ferocious ladies in all cultures and also very kind and very womanly ladies in all cultures, and I think often they both come in the same package. You just don't want to get your wife upset no matter where she's from. Then she turns into the tiger. But she can also be the one that is there for you when you need her the most, the one that makes you feel needed and loved and all that stuff, and I think that's international.
Yes, I think so too.
Yes,
with this one. And you get nice guys and not so nice guys in every culture as well.
Yeah,
don't assume any of them are romantic. I think they need to be trained to some extent or encouraged. And yes, there are some things that's transnational. That has nothing to do with what your background is. And in a way, it's comforting to see that. Mm-hmm. And actually, according to the paper, it has done a bit of an investigation and analysis on the challenges that transnational relationships face. Let's look at that list, too.
Yeah, I mean, one of the ones that resonates with me, I think, the most is culture shock. You know, like, in the U.S., let's say one of the typical situations is I go to meet my wife's family. So I think many times if you're a foreigner, you go to meet your wife's family. You should. She's your wife, and that's your family as well. There's that communication, maybe barrier or culture shock of someone that's not just from another country, but from a different generation in that country. And so that takes extra work to be able to understand them. You know, if you live in one country, you're familiar with the different generation's culture. Like, I'm familiar with the baby boomer culture in the U.S., whereas maybe the baby boomer 1950s generation culture in China would be a little more difficult for me to understand. But like I said, that's, if you're in love, that's the smallest mountain to climb. I think, any mountain that gets in the way, you'd climb it together. And when you're doing that together, it's nothing. It's a challenge you get to do with someone you care about. It's an adventure, a journey. And I think it's so enriching, too, to be able to have in-laws where you can learn another language, learn another culture, and just this expands your world exponentially. So I think though it can be seen as something a little bit harder to grasp, it can be seen as something that is benefiting. Also, I see actually some good things. So maybe, let's say Spring Festival, okay? If you're two Chinese people get married, maybe you have to decide whose family you're going to see if they don't live in the same city, right?
Yeah.
Maybe you marry a foreigner and the foreigner's like, oh, let's go see your family on Chinese Spring Festival. And then Christmas, you go see their family.
Yeah.
And it just works out nice. Everybody gets to see their family for the important holidays. There's also culture shocks that are win-win,
Win-win. That's a good word.
Yeah. And what about when you go visit each other's families or when you are eating together?
Ooh,
and
food,
That's the part I find it super interesting about the meals, your eating habits, like how it influences your marriage life.
Yeah, how do you cook dinner when people have different things they like to eat?
Yeah.
I want my kung pao chicken when the guy wants pizza or
pasta,
cheeseburger.
Yeah.
Oh,
Kung Pao chicken burger.
Everybody likes burgers and Kung Pao chicken.
And there's an interesting case in the paper's research.
Yeah.
It's just like a girl from Nanjing. She's a crazy fan of the duck head and chicken feet, but her U.S. Ooh. Husband can't accept it.
Yeah.
So how would you deal with it? But I think the big problem is not you have problem, but how you deal with it.
Yeah.
That's the most important thing. Yeah.
Yes, but it becomes a bit of a battle, or maybe not.
Okay, so my sister, she hates fish, right? But her husband loves fish. So when they go to a place, one orders what they like, the other one orders what they like, But I do got to say that food's a big deal. But as long as you like chocolate, I think we're going to get along just great. But no, honestly, I think, again, I could see this being interesting. Of course, things like rabbit head might be a little more I think there you'll find a lot of Chinese people also don't want to eat rabbit head. I've asked a lot of our coworkers, and they're like, nah, I don't think I'd have that. But, you know, like you said, Kung Pao chicken, you saw so many of the, we had these noodles for lunch. They were delicious. I don't know the name. Mm. You know, I think, like, actually, the menu just got that much bigger, you know, and now you can enjoy and try new things. And that's great, but I can't understand how it would be difficult at times. Like, for me, I love cereal, okay? So in the U.S., it's very common for breakfast to be, you have your bowl, you pour in your cereal, like Cheerios or Honey Nut Cheerios, love those, and dump a bunch of milk and drink the milk after, and you're out the door. Bye, sweetie. I'll see you in the afternoon. You know, but when I first came to China, I couldn't find cereal so easily, and breakfast was a bit different. And that was a challenge at first, for sure, a culture shock that I was like, whoa, no cereal. Breathe, Ryan, breathe.
How do I survive?
But then, you know, I was introduced to baozi and the fried dough. Wow. And suddenly my world got a little bit better. You know, there's ways to cope. And like I said, at the end of the day, the love you feel for someone else is going to dwarf all that other stuff. And I think you can find problems and benefits to this.
Yes. I guess it's about appreciating
each other. And
communication
is essential.
Yes. Yes, no. I agree. And also, you know, just appreciating each other. Yeah. And because you love each other, and then that appreciation expands towards the other person's family and culture. Mm. Under that big umbrella, I think we can cuddle very happily together. You're listening to Roundtable with myself, He Yang, Ryan Price, and Huang Shen.